Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I feel especially grateful today because Dr. Nancy Dreyfuss is my guest. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Diana. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. It's so good to have you here. And Nancy has a really an amazing background because she went to the Columbia School of Journalism, and that turned her into a prize-winning reporter. I want you to tell us about the prize you won because it's very impressive. But then she went on to become a therapist, getting her PhD, or I'm PsyD, it's the same, doctorate, at Hahnemann Medical College, and she's also been studying Buddhism, and she has the most wonderful book that will save you years of therapy if you get it. It's called Talk to Me Like Someone You Love, and you can also get flashcards, Relationship Repair in a Flash. We're going to explore all of this, but Nancy, would you start, please, with your reporter background, because, of course, your book is so well written.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I have written a couples communication book. And when I was a teenager, I would look at guys and girls talking to each other lovingly, standing in front of their lockers, and I wondered, I felt so awkward, I wondered whether there was a book that told you what to say.
Oh, you wondered if there was a book, so the seeds were early on for you.
Yes, this, I wondered if there was a book, and I managed really some of my own pain, my own feeling like a victim, by becoming a crusading journalist. I went to the Columbia School of Journalism, and I only wrote about you if you were battered, abused, the victim of prejudice. And out of that, I won something called the Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award for reporting on the problems of the disadvantaged. Geraldo Rivera, who was actually quite idealistic in his 20s and early 30s, won, won for broadcast, and I won for print. And out of that, we had an amazing lunch with Ted and Ethel Kennedy and editors of the New York Times. I got a job offer at the New York Times.
And you were young then, because this is about...
This was in 1975, and I was 25.
So that was pretty heady stuff.
It was very exciting, and I was about to go to New York, and 6 weeks before I was supposed to go to New York, it's a little more complicated, I had some profound meditative experiences.
Do you mind sharing that?
Yeah. I had the awareness that what journalism did was it got people angry and frightened, which only created more upset, more violence, fear of people. This, I would certainly say this has only gotten worse. And though this wasn't my immediate thought, I began feeling I could do more good for the world being kind, supportive, and insightful with 20, 30 people a week than I could with getting a few million readers enraged over the world's grievances. So what I like to say to people is that, you know, I'm doing I'm doing world peace with the person you woke up with this morning. And to be honest with you, I don't think there's going to be world peace until people know how to make peace under their own ruse.
That's very true. And with your flashcards, is there one particular flashcard? I think it's... what is that might create world peace if more people used it?
Well, what I have come up with is a way for a couple, usually a couple, it could be a parent and a teenager, in the midst of an upset. You know that feeling, Diana, when you're with the person and you think you are with a completely impossible or insane person and things only seem to be getting worse? Things have gone, as I like to say, from cozy to crazy.
Yeah, that I like that phrase.
That in the midst of an upset, I have created a series of flashcards for the person who might be a drop saner in the moment to simply hold up to the partner right in the midst of an upset. Some of them, they're pretty basic. I wish you could hear this as me saying yes to myself, not no to you. I have no idea what to do right now, except to tell you I'm in a lot of pain, and I know you are too, and I want it to be friendlier between us. I know I was off, but I'm worried you would rather clobber me than get close again. And this one, which I kind of like, I think I'm supposed to know how to do this, but honestly, I have no idea. And I can certainly say as a therapist, when I fall to that position, my partner is no longer worried that I'm going to sound like his shrink rather than his therapist, rather than his girlfriend.
It seems to me that, and I know this because I've, since receiving your flashcards and your book, I've used some of the flashcards in my own couples counseling.
Wow.
And it diffuses the arguments immediately. And talk about, would you, Nancy, why it's helpful not to have the tone of voice, but just the flashcard.
I was hoping you would ask, Diana.
Yes.
Well, I have given years of thought to this question. Consider that when you are in an upset with somebody, what's known as your fight-or-flight response, which we were given to help us survive...
That's right.
...is automatically...
Well, hardwired.
But this is what we are hardwired to look for danger.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are with an intimate partner and we are feeling invalidated, we are feeling unheard, we're feeling not met, it's a fear. We feel threatened.
Mm-hmm.
When our fight-or-flight response is activated... We are looking for danger. So let's say, Diana, you and I have an upset, and I say to you, pretty sincerely, I say, you know, Diana, I'm really sorry. You're going to hear that 2-3% of weariness and exasperation in my voice. You're going to hear something that sounds like defeat, not like caring. There's a flashcard that
point.
I love that melts me. What can I say that would make you feel understood? But I can promise you that if I were to say it when I was in any way triggered, it would come out like, okay, so can you? What can I say that would make you feel understood? So when you can align with the purity of the message and your partner does not have to deal with any conflicting voice tone, I have to say the results are often miraculous, and I would suggest to any parent, try an experiment. Tell your child to go brush their teeth. And notice what happens, and hold up a flashcard which just has a toothbrush. And report to Nancy Dreyfus at AOL your results. And you can intuit what the results would be, the difference.
And your website is nancydreyfus.com.
Yes, it is.
And it's a very wonderful website because it gives a lot of information, and that would be Nancy, and then dreyfus.com. And when I write up the synopsis of this program, I'll, of course, put that up there. You mentioned something that we didn't talk about in the pre-interview, how parents can use these flashcards or make their own.
Absolutely.
Yes, and you talk very, in your book, when you do a history of with a new client or a new couple, you tap almost immediately into their how they felt, say, as a fifth grader when they were vulnerable. And when
God, you read that?
Oh, yes, of course I did. And I think it's brilliant because then you can find out. So give the example about not being invited to a party when you're a fifth grader.
Diana, would you be willing to be my subject or talk about a client of yours?
Sure.
Okay, well, or anybody listening to this, I ask.
Yeah.
I don't take a full history.
Right.
What
right.
I simply do in a first session is I ask the client to imagine that they're in fifth grade, 10
right.
years old, and they've become friendly with a same-sex kid, and they've been to that kid's house. I say, Barry, if you're a boy, Sharon, if you're a girl, and you've been to each other's houses, and you're sort of, you could even say you have a little even bit of a crush on each other. It's like a new best friend. And you find out that that kid is having a birthday party to which you were not invited. How would you feel? And most people are able to access that they felt hurt. Some people will say they got angry. Most people will say that they feel hurt and left out.
Right.
And then the $64,000 question is, would you tell your mother? So I would say that there are 20% of people who say they would not, 20-25%, and probably that was the case. So what I say to everybody, whether you would have gone to your mother or not, if you wouldn't, I would say this is science fiction. You're going to have to make it up. How would your mother have responded?
Mm-hmm.
if you weren't invited to the party.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give actually my own example. Where this intervention came from, my mother said, well, I never liked Cheryl's mother, and we're going to have a party and not invite Cheryl's parents.
Oh.
You're going to have a party and not invite Cheryl. So there was an enormous amount of energy put on something, but no one was caring about my feelings. My mother was a little over the top. The average mother, people will say, oh, my mother was very warm and loving. And I say, really? What? How did your mom respond?
Mm-hmm.
My mom responded by saying, there'll be other parties, and maybe she could only invite a certain amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so people go through life thinking that's warm and loving.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than what I would do if we were in front of each other, so I'll have to describe it. I say to the client, right now my hand is on my heart. I can't want you to all imagine my hand is on my heart. I said, when you were hurt and left out, you were in your feeling center. And your mom, who had a theory about why you might not be invited, went into her thinking center, her head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so what you learned was that nobody was going to meet you where you felt. The only thing that really would have made you feel loved is if your mom had said to you, that must have really hurt. I know how much you like Barry. Not what a creep Barry was or what a creep
Sharon
was.
Exactly.
Because then what happens, Diana, you just feel shamed that you didn't get invited.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I love that you brought that intervention up. And, you know, my clients always talk about it, and they always know when they bring in a relative, they
mm-hmm.
know I'm going to ask that question.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
relevant to the flashcards because that's the reason the two of you are already fighting is because you both grew up with the mother who meant well, probably in most cases, but did not feel you. You did not feel felt by your caregivers. And so you are fighting because whatever you're doing is you're not feeling each other. What happens when you stop the action and you go and get one of the flashcards is that you are both feeling yourself, usually, and you're also in some way feeling your partner. I love one flashcard 41 from the section taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I realize I'm overreacting. Can you give me a minute to get sane again? I can promise you, Diana, and I bet you can affirm this, there is nothing your partner will appreciate more than acknowledging that you have been insane.
Absolutely. There's a theme, if we go back to the party that you didn't get invited to, and you expand on this beautifully, Nancy, and that is that you're so vulnerable at that age, so very vulnerable, and if you're constantly, as an adult, in a self-protective mode, you can't really experience emotional and physical intimacy.
That is very true. And I say to people, after they've been in, I'm so touched that you appreciated the significance of that intervention.
Oh, well, of course. Thank you.
I am really touched that you appreciated that. Because what I say to people, I say to them, you know, I'm a pretty smart therapist, and there's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to be a reporter, so I know how to interview.
That's right.
Why
and
is
be
it,
interviewed like you are today. This is wonderful.
Why is it that you're coming in with a crisis and 10 issues you can't resolve, and I'm not interested yet in hearing them? I only want to know what would have happened if you didn't get invited to the party,
mm-hmm.
because I'm only interested in one thing.
Mm-hmm.
What happened when you were vulnerable? How did your universe respond? I said,
right.
Remember when the two of you were in love? You were completely undefended with each other.
Undefended.
That is what felt so delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're wanting to do is get people back to that undefended state.
You know, some of this does tie into attachment theory.
It does.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You know about attachment theory?
I do know about attachment theory. I would have to say that it is something that I have studied and read something
uh-huh.
about. I'm a little somewhat familiar with Sue mm-hmm. Johnson's work, but what comes to your mind when you're thinking about attachment theory?
If a child comes out of secure attachment, that's a lucky child, and I got to do that, and I feel very, very fortunate because my mother and my father were available with eye contact and with hugs, and
beautiful.
Yeah, I was just very, very lucky. And then there's anxious attachment and avoidant attachment, and I do see this played out in the therapy that I do with my clients. And I don't want to go off into attachment theory, but it sounded like your mother's reaction, she may have had very much anxious attachment in her own.
I would say that was actually a brilliant observation. When she was born, her father had just been diagnosed with cancer when my grandmother was pregnant with her.
Oh, my.
So she grew up, even in utero, there was a sea of anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
And, I'm sure my grandmother's attention was on her husband, who had, gotten a very serious diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say that's very, very, that was really a very, very good call. And, when we talk about attachment,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say something that may sound a little provocative.
Yeah, say it.
What's provocative to me will probably be very boring. Probably be very tame for you. But what's provocative is I sometimes say to people to jolt them, there's no such thing as having a relationship with another person. There's only having a relationship with yourself in their force field. So one aspect of attachment and what the flashcards do is that when I'm attached, when I'm connected to my own internal reality, I'm automatically connected to you. And that's what people don't get. People are working too hard, actually. It's all sort of counterintuitive, really trying to connect to the other.
Mm-hmm.
When, in fact, the essence of turning their relationship around is to be beautifully and ruthlessly connected to themselves.
Mm-hmm. And I think one reason people have better, more intimate relationships when they're more mature is they've had time to get to know themselves and maybe
Absolutely.
Even be in therapy. I mean, I heard you say in our pre-interview that you woke up, and I won't say the age you said, but you woke up at a certain age, and that was a result of doing a lot of personal work.
Yes, a lot of personal therapy, different meditation, different kinds of growth trainings, getting curious really about my own wiring.
Yes.
Since it's very pleasurable talking to a real grown-up clinician, so I'm going to take one more step that sort of enriches this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I do with clients is this. I say to them, do I have permission to get very close to you?
Oh, beautiful. Good.
And they say yes. And I move about a few inches from their face, very, very close, and I'm very, very aware of, I convey an energy of worrying how we're doing. So I'll sort of repeat what I do with the client. So I'm very close to your face, and I'm saying, do you like me? Am I helping you? Are we okay? Are we good? Do you think I'm smart? Am I helping you? Are you getting value out of it? Are you liking me?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'm sort of caricaturing what most people are doing, looking at the other, worrying how we're doing, worrying how you're feeling about me.
Mm.
Then I say to the person, this is simple math. Could we agree that I'm now giving you 92% of my attention? My focus is completely on, I'm reading your face. I hope my breath is okay. I had onions before. I hope it's not bothering you. Did I powder my nose? I'm giving you 92% of my attention. And then I say, so how much of my attention is focused on my own insides so that I even know what is going on? And I said, the reason your relationships are feeling lame and not sturdy is if 92% of your attention is going to the other person, you don't have enough of a charge connected to your own insides to actually even know what you're feeling.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And I'd like to back up for the sake of this show today and ask you, I know, but I think our listening audience would be fascinated to know, where did this idea come from, the flashcards? Because the subtitle of your book is Relationship Repair in a Flash. So would you tell us?
I would be happy to. I grew up in a family, not surprising. It's different from yours. You sounded like you grew up in a situation that was unusual for many therapists that I know, Diana, but I grew up with a very unhappy mother with all sorts of attachment issues and abandonment fears who was constantly screaming at my father. And her favorite word for him was asinine, actually. And
oh,
in
dear.
The early 90s, I was a, more than a beginning therapist, not a seasoned therapist, but, you know, mm-hmm. I wasn't a junior. And I'm with a couple who reminded me very much of my parents. And this to me almost has a spiritual implication. When you hear how my wounding, my intelligence, my healing, everything sort of came together like a perfect storm.
Mm-hmm.
And I had what's known as a countertransference reaction, which is where I was reacting to the client like I was a child. I was a child, and they were my parents. And I went into what's called a trauma trance. I almost couldn't speak. I was like, it was so similar to my parents. I was like a 9-year-old, paralyzed, unable to stop the upset.
You were really triggered.
I was very triggered.
Mm-hmm.
I was extremely triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the clinician, and I was supposed to do something, and I couldn't think of what to say.
Mm-hmm.
So spontaneously, I leaned over. There was a torn envelope on a table, and I wrote, "Talk to me like I'm someone you love." And I
mm-hmm.
gave it to the husband, and I stage whispered, "Hold it up to her."
Mm-hmm.
And he was
mm-hmm.
sort of dazzled. He
mm-hmm.
followed my instruction. He read it and held it up. And I watched something that was to change the course of my life, and I hope to change the course of other people's lives. This very difficult, combative, bristly woman felt the dignity of the message, Diana,
mm-hmm.
saw that it connected to her husband, and, you know, underneath it all, and I would have said this was true of my mother. She really only wanted to respect my father. You know, if my father had been able to stand up to her more, it would have actually probably been a better situation. And she could feel the dignity in the message, and she was appropriately shamed, but not unduly so, over her own behavior. And she softened, and she said to the husband, "I haven't been very nice, have I?" And she was called to be more loving and more respectful, and in about less than 2 minutes, they were speaking as equals, which probably had not occurred in years. And they walked out of the office. I was still speechless, but I was thinking, still speechless.
Well, you knew you had stumbled onto something very profound.
I felt that I had.
Yes.
I felt that I had. And then I spent the next few months really coming up with other flashcards. And I put project has gone through about 4 or 5 different versions from
home. Your book is in its third edition, which in the publishing world today unusual.
I had no idea that it was going to ever hit the world. My first set was on index cards on a loose leaf ring. I
mm-hmm.
had no idea it was going to go public.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave a group of women as an experiment about 3 or 4 cards. I can't remember what they were except one. And they came back. Their favorite card was, "I don't feel heard."
Mm.
And they came back.
Heard.
Weeks.
I don't feel heard.
I don't feel
yes.
heard. They, you know, it was like better than therapy.
Yes.
They would be with their husbands, and they would stop arguing. They would stop pummeling the husband. They would stop trying to get through. They simply said, "I don't feel heard." And as per my instruction, to say nothing else.
Yeah.
And they got much more textured responses.
Right.
But
right.
more better listening and more textured responses from the husband.
Mm-hmm. John Gottman, as many regular listeners know, I'm in Seattle, and John Gottman has been famous for his love lab at the University of Washington. And he and you say this on your website, let me mention that again, Nancy Dreyfus. You pronounce it Dreyfus. Sorry, it's Dreyfus.com.
It's pronounced
yes, Dreyfus. He calls these bids for connection.
Yes,
and you write, "I've watched women explain in precise detail to their husbands who felt so off to them in their husbands' approaches, and still not much closer at the end of an impassioned sharing." So, and then of course he just thinks your book is wonderful, and you have on the back of your book, John Gottman says, Nancy and her flashcards weren't inspiration behind our research into the important process of attempting to change the affect during marital conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. And your first publication was in 1991.
Yep. In 1991,
mm-hmm.
what we did was we just published 55 flashcards.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was another edition of the book, and actually the book then came out of print, and in 06 I began getting requests galore
mm-hmm.
because the book had been cited in a HarperCollins book called 500 Ways to Change the World, only there were no books available. So another edition came out in 09 with about 101 flashcards, and we just came out with a new edition in January with 127 flashcards and an essay. And I want to be clear about something because there has been a little confusion.
Yes.
The book itself contains the flashcards. The flashcards are actually holding up the page, and there are 127 in the new book. There is also a little portable deck of cards. It looks a little like a cigarette box,
yep.
Diana, and it only has 64, but it's more
portable.
I know.
I've got it in my hands.
Yep. It's more portable. And since you mentioned John Gottman,
mm-hmm.
I want to share a piece about him.
Oh, please.
One of the things he has said, which has been very exciting about connecting with him, and I had the pleasure a number of years ago of spending a day in his extraordinary lab with him.
Mm.
As your readers may, listeners, excuse me.
Oh, I'd like to hear that, and it is my intention to ask him to be on this program one day.
Oh, he's a must. I mean, he wires couples up.
Yeah.
And he can tell with exact precision what people are feeling.
And he's got a mathematical solution. He can predict.
Yes, he can predict.
As I understand it, he was trained at Caltech or someplace like that.
By simply watching a couple's bodily reaction
mm-hmm.
to each other,
mm-hmm.
he can predict with 96% accuracy whether they will be together in 5 years.
Right.
But the piece I want to say that's relevant to my book is that while I was creating these, what
mm-hmm.
he was coming up with, he used the word repair mechanisms. That couples who he considered happy, which are not most of the couples, by the way,
mm-hmm.
couples he considered happy actually create their own repair mechanisms in the midst of an upset. So he said that a happy couple in the midst of an argument, Diana, in the middle of it, would say something like, "Honey, I know this is hard to hear."
Mm-hmm.
In other words, mm-hmm. they are maintaining, as you would say, the attachment.
Mm-hmm.
Even while there's a conflict, they are in friendly conflict, as opposed to unfriendly conflict, which is what I am really attempting to do. So those select few couples who naturally come up with repair mechanisms, that's fabulous. For the rest of us, including me, who's created this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember my stepson many years ago screaming when he heard my ex and I arguing, "Use your flashcards." You know, use your flashcards. They are actually the exact sort of repair mechanisms that Gottman cited that happy couples use organically.
Very, very interesting. Kind of a personal question, but does your daughter ever use your flashcards in her relationship?
Well, it's interesting. When my daughter's now 25,
yeah.
and when she was 5 years old and I was creating all of this,
mm-hmm.
she was learning to write.
Mm-hmm.
And she came up, it was sort of misspelled, with like about 11 M's, and she wrote, "Mommy, you stop it." And she said, "It's for when your mommy's mad and when she's at the computer and you want her to play."
Mommy, you stop it.
Mommy, you stop it. It was the all-purpose card for a child. And yes, she does use my
That's best great.
and actually, in her relationship,
yes.
Jesus.
Well, Nancy, Dr. Nancy, we need to go to our half-hour break, and so we'll do that. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about going from rupture to repair and some of your best advice. And I'm hoping to get you back for a part two. So, you know, because you added on making love section. And, of
yep.
course, that fits in quite well with this program. But the rest of it does, too, honestly. Nancy, you're great. And we'll be back in just a few minutes, so stay with us. We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley here with Dr. Nancy Dreyfus, And she is the wonderful author of Talk to Me Like Some Like I'm Someone You Love, Relationship Repair in a Flash. Going from rupture to repair. Well, we've been talking about that, but you have just a wonderful card. Apparently, it's the book's lead flash card, and it is on page 22. This feels awful. Can we start again and really listen to each other? Now, what's so powerful about this card? I have an idea, but I really want to hear it from you.
Well, it's acknowledging that when it says this feels awful, and I say that to my partner, there's no blame. There's no blame.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually feeling my partner because I'm taking a leap of faith that he's not liking this any more than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm acknowledging there's a problem and doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
It is so powerful. I mean, unless you're a with most of the flashcards, unless you're a psychopath, you will melt. Who's not going to respond with a flashcard that says, this feels awful? Can we start again and really listen to each other? And there's an implication embedded in it is I want to listen to you, not just that I'm needing something from you.
Right.
Let's do something here together. In other words, I have spent years thinking about why these work, and because I once had the thought, it's sort of interesting picking your brain a little bit about this, I once had a thought, and I've never done it, what it would be like to do, and I think this is probably even related to sexuality, to do therapy with someone, Diana, and only be thinking about their comfort giving and receiving. Imagine if someone was completely comfortable giving and completely comfortable receiving, they would be in very good shape. And what happens, what the flashcard intervention is the sender is giving and the receiver is receiving.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that giving and receiving are the building blocks of love, corny as that may sound. And so that what happens is this flashcard intervention is templating us. It's like getting us entrained to a rhythm where love happens. We're giving and where we're not closed to giving and we're not closed to receiving. And the flashcard, in a flash, penetrates the place where we have stopped giving and stopped receiving because we are both trying to prove our point or proving how impossible the other person is.
I think it's brilliant.
Well, I have I'll share with you.
So many people are so defensive and so critical all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. It plays in, if people can do this genuinely, it plays into really good sex, really intimate sex
on
a physical and emotional level. Because there is, I think in really good sex, there is giving and receiving and sometimes back and forth a little bit. And like if you're receiving oral sex, that's a great time to really tune into your own needs and focus in. But when you're receiving oral sex, when you're giving oral sex, that's a wonderful time to be an intuitive lover, to really focus in on your partner and be unselfish and be and not to be critical or defensive. The best sex is kind of in flow. Now, how did you get into deciding to have this new section in your third edition?
Well,
in
the spirit of full disclosure, let me just say, in the period of time between the first edition of the book and this edition of the book, I would say that I had a sexual awakening.
Awakening. Oh, good.
I would say that I was the bookworm. I was, you know, even creating this. This is like a creative kind of mental thing. I'm a wordsmith.
Right.
And I've had a partner who got me on a motorcycle, on a golf course, and in bed. So I personally would say that I just became more interested in sexuality. But given my pre-existing interest in connection and contact, let's consider this. What if I were to say what gets in the way, from my perspective, what mm-hmm. gets in the way of optimal lovemaking is worry. People, most people would say that the purpose of sex is pleasure and connection.
Mm-hmm.
But many people, when they're in bed, are not thinking about pleasure and connection.
That's right.
They are worried, how am I doing? They are aware that they're going through the motions. They are doing it to prove that they're sexual. They are doing it so their partner's not mad at them.
Exactly.
And so there is all this stuff. So even if I am going down on my partner or vice versa,
mm-hmm.
I could be, if somebody observing me externally,
mm-hmm.
Diana, was watching me, they would say, wow, she's really giving to him, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
But who knows what I'm feeling inside that
mm-hmm.
I'm giving it to him because I crashed the car earlier and don't want him to be so pissed at me. I mean, that's a silly kind of example. But in other words, it often lovemaking is not done because you and I are feeling close and something and desire is arising in us. We are doing something because we think it's the right thing to do. We are doing it to sometimes to avoid other issues. And so what I wanted to do was take what has already been sort of my thing
mm-hmm.
and see if I could smooth and enliven and deepen the connection
mm-hmm.
between partners before there's physical contact. May I read some of the Making Love flashcards?
I would love it, and I have open in your book most popular card, which is, I'd love it if we could go slow.
I actually have that cape about, is that I when I first got the idea of doing this, I polled every female that I knew
uh-huh.
and said, if you could give one message to your partner,
mm-hmm.
what would it be? And they either said, slow down. I'd love mm-hmm. it if we could go slow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the most popular of the Making Love cards. But I want to read some of the other ones.
Yep,
I would have
do.
To say one of my favorites
mm-hmm.
is, I want to make love, but only if you are liking me.
Right.
Because I feel usually anybody mm-hmm. who's literate enough is reading my book,
mm-hmm.
probably they love their partner at some level.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
liking is trickier.
Mm-hmm.
There's just such a wonderful vibe. Like, we're in a good space. There's not unfinished business. So when I hold up, I want to make love, but only if you are liking me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm establishing the energy that I really want between my partner and myself. And, you know, let's say we've had an upset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's me, like, I don't want to go into this if we have some unfinished business. You know, if we have some unfinished business. So
mm-hmm.
I'll read a couple of them. I want to make love, but only if you are liking me. When we are out of sync, you act like something is very wrong. Nothing's wrong. We just need to get back in sync. Very
mm-hmm.
often, and particularly this can happen, I'm not sure sex-wise, could be men or women, but
mm-hmm.
we're out of sync at the beginning of an encounter. That's it. You're not in the mood. I can tell you're not really into it. No, so sometimes that's true, but sometimes you just need to get back into sync.
Exactly.
I've gotten a lot of response from this one. When you give me the message that you think I'm just a guy looking to get laid, it feels like you don't see me. And I have to say, women hurt men. Women mm-hmm. hurt men. And this, again, was a later in life awareness because, you know, I grew up in a generation that, you know, sex is something boys do to girls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it is very hurtful to a man when a woman tends to see an aroused man or a man in desire as somehow using her or wanting something from her rather than wanting something with her.
With her.
You know, a man can be aroused, but that doesn't mean you're an object.
Right.
And that requires a lot of self-worth, Diana, on the woman's part to feel, yeah, he is aroused and he likes me.
Exactly. And David Snarch, I think you mentioned him in your
mm-hmm.
book,
mm-hmm.
talks a lot about that in terms of having probably the best sex of our lives when we're in our 50s and 60s because
mm-hmm.
we are more differentiated and we just feel more comfortable with ourselves. I think you make an example, I don't remember where it is in your book, about hand-holding and talking about anxiety? Because you and your former husband went to one of his workshops.
Oh, my God, you're remembering some of my favorite sections of the book.
Well, this is my job, Nancy.
I can now visualize what now you have given me the perfect template of what I want my book reader to be like.
Okay. Oh, thank you. You're darling.
Well, many years ago, Schnarch is probably considered one of the most brilliant thinkers about sexuality and long-term relationships.
I went to one of his weekend workshops.
And what he says is that long-term sexuality is a function of differentiation, and what I would say, it's being true to yourself, where I would say it's being attached to yourself and your partner's force field.
Mm-hmm.
And I will share, I'll do it a little more briefly than I did in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a workshop where you had to be a therapist, a dual therapist marriage, like was my own, or at least one of you were therapists, so it was for clinicians, but you were working on your own marriage. And actually he had asked, how many people have considered divorce? I would say 80% of the couples raised their hands, and
probably why they were attending his rather expensive workshop.
And then he said, how many haven't had sex in a year? And a fair amount of people raised their hand. And so
in a year,
This is what he did. It was an amazing exercise, Diana.
Mm-hmm.
He says to everybody, hold your partner's hand. And that's it. Sounds like a pretty blah exercise, right? And it went on for a very, very long time. And then he says, you may now drop hands. And then he says, okay, now we're going to do the exercise. I want you to go through, like with a microscope, every moment of that exercise. When I announced the exercise, when you and your partner were lobbying for position, where you were going to keep your hand in your elbow, how you figured out how you were going to hold your hand. When you were looking at the couple next to you making goo-goo eyes and wondering why you and your partner weren't looking so connected. Worrying whether your partner was bored, whether you were bored. When the exercise ended, did one of you feel left? Did one of you feel abandoned? I mean, he went through with a microscope, and then he said, now I want you to acknowledge any place that you felt anxious during that whole exercise. Was there anybody who did not feel anxious? There was no one who didn't raise their hand. And then he said, okay, now we're doing sex therapy. Tell your partner every moment you felt anxious in that exercise. And then decide, did you feel more connected when you were holding hands, which was a metaphor for sex, or when you were sharing with your partner the anxiety about doing the exercise? And I have to say, it was profound.
Yeah.
It was profound, and as you know, probably even from a weekend workshop with him or reading the book, Diana, his classic exercise for couples, his classic foreplay is called Hugging Till Relax.
I have it in my, I do bibliotherapy, and I have it in my file. I give it to some of my couples. Sometimes we do it right in session.
Do you? I will actually thank you for the idea. It's a great idea, which is simply holding each other until you feel connected. And in a sense, it's very resonant with my flashcards. You don't proceed until you're connected. Because if you start making love to do it or for any reason other than feeling connected, it's probably you might have an orgasm. It might look to the external world that you're having grown up, you know, nuanced lovemaking. But if you are not connected, it is not going to be satisfying.
It's so very true. It's so difficult for people to share what they really want and need, and that's the brilliance of your card 110. I would love to share a sexual fantasy I have with you, and I want it to bring us closer. I work, of course, with people that have so much difficulty, many of them, in communicating what they want sexually. And if they don't do that, I say that it's like going on a treasure hunt without any clues.
That's great.
And, you know, a lot of women do become more assertive when they're somewhere past 50, and they are a little more in touch with their desires and their wants, and they can speak up. Think how difficult it is for a woman in her 20s or sometimes even 30s to be able to do this. And she doesn't even, for starters, she doesn't know her own body well enough to say what she needs and wants. Case for masturbation, by the way. But this is very good because you can say, I've had a version of this with some of my clients that instead of sharing a fantasy, they might share, oh, honey, I had this dream. And it wasn't really a dream. It was a wakeful dream. But it enabled her to talk about something she was embarrassed to say, sexually speaking. And, but you write this card about fantasies is for the thousands upon thousands of people who find it challenging to share with their partner.
Right, and I want to add that I say I would love to share a sexual fantasy I have with you, and I want it to bring us closer. Because sometimes when people hear, you have more experience with this than I do, Diana, but sometimes when people even hear sexual fantasy, their automatic assumption is they're going to be asked to do something or be in a way that's not them. And I think it's very, very important when we introduce a sexual fantasy that's new to our experience, that we are aware that doing anything we haven't done before can be scary.
Yes, yes. Something new is scary. And, of course, the most common male fantasy, as I understand it, is a threesome, and that would be scary for a lot of women. I mean, if it became a reality.
And I think that there are some people who might want to share the fantasy, and they themselves might be afraid to carry it out. They might not want to carry it out for many, many reasons. But even sharing the fantasy could develop into some new fantasy, you know, between us, or some new kind of sexual play between us.
Well, I've worked with some couples where they might, in reality, not want to bring a third person into the sexual relationship, but they can imagine the third person.
Yes.
And they talk about that while they're making love. And that adds some extra spice, because one of the most difficulties, a huge difficulty that many long-term couples have, is to keep the relationship kind of spicy, and that so that the brain continues to produce dopamine, the hormone of arousal. And dopamine needs novelty. So if you want your relationship to be monogamous, I say you have to be creative and maybe share some fantasies so that you get more dopamine.
I'm laughing, and I'm afraid this will be a little tangential, but I'll share it with you.
Oh, please.
About a year ago, I was walking through a parking lot with my partner, and he wanted it actually like almost in a hotel, on the grounds of a hotel, not far from the front door of the hotel, wanted us to go behind a bush and do something sexual. And he said, I want to do something a little dangerous. And we had a joke. I said to him, you're just being with a Jewish therapist is dangerous enough.
I do love your sense of humor, which shines in your book, too, a lot. Jewish therapist. Didn't he cross out one of your cards instead of, he crossed out and put therapist. I don't need a therapist.
Well, actually, this is, not surprisingly, this is a very popular card around our place. The card is, right now, I don't need a lecture. I need your love.
Yeah.
And he has crossed it out and wrote, right now, I don't need a therapist. I need your love. And it is framed over the bed.
Yeah.
So we do point and click.
Point and click.
Now, I want to share this is interesting. There's a Freudian slip. I want to share a fantasy.
Yes.
I'm obviously must be feeling very relaxed with you, Diana, as we're speaking to thousands of viewers. Flashcard 113.
113, yes.
Okay. I'm thinking that you're thinking that I should know what you are wanting right now. I wish I did, honey, but I don't. Now, I'm going to disclose that there's a dialogue in the book about a couple, but actually it's my partner and I. This is my partner and I, 113.
So not Sherry and Jason.
Not Sherry. Oh, my God. You really
have it open.
No, it's not Sherry and Jason. It's Nancy and Tim. And it has to do with
going to bed one night, we were feeling kind of, we were actually very tired. We were watching a movie and both falling asleep.
Uh-huh.
And we got into bed and, we sort of snuggled and then we went to sleep. But I could feel that he was not asleep and that he was restless.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, honey, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, you know, I thought we would make love. I said, well, mm-hmm. I just thought we were both sort of falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, if you're awake below the waist, you got to let me know. And he said to me, but remember that time, maybe 6 months ago, where we had been in a similar scenario, and we had just had beautiful lovemaking.
Mm-hmm.
And he had thought, that happened once before, and I should just know. Now, what I will say, and I say it in my book, is that our first experiences of life when we are newborns, in the first 6 months of life, we cannot talk. And the way that we feel loved is that we have what's known usually as an attuned caregiver, usually a mother, who needs to be kind of psychically tuned in.
Mm-hmm.
So there is something about somebody just knowing what we want at a biological, physical, emotional level that is very satisfying and makes us feel very secure. But I am here to say to the world, out loud, to my partner, to the world, that nobody can do that all the time. And if we feel called upon to have to do that, we're going to be like that woman who's 2 inches close to you, looking at you. Is this okay? Is that okay? In other words, you can't be that focused on what you're imagining your partner is wanting all the time. You're going to lose yourself. People need to, it's trite, but people do need to communicate.
You use the word opposite that flashcard that I really like. It's an old-fashioned word, and it's cherished.
Mm.
We can feel very taken care of, cherished.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Most of us long to be cherished.
Mm.
And if we got it in that first 6 months of life, we're very, very fortunate, as you put it, to have an attuned mother.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so proud of my daughter who's got 2 little boys, my grandsons, and I just witness her as a very attuned mother. And these, the baby and the almost 3-year-old now, they're going to just be great. They're already great.
How old are they?
Well, so the oldest is almost next month, he'll be 3.
Mm-hmm.
And the youngest next month will be 1. So she's busy, but she's handling it very well. And I feel very proud of her. And I'm going to tell her to listen to the show so she can hear it.
You know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I once went to a very interesting lecture, and I'm trying to think who spoke. He was very popular in the men's movement. John, he wrote a book, Flyboy. I forget what it was. But he asked everyone in the room, would they rather be cherished? He said, obviously you want both, but if you had to choose what was more important to you, would you rather be cherished or would you rather be respected?
Oh, great
almost
question.
Almost every couple... And there were some gay couples, straight couples.
Uh-huh.
In almost every couple, one wanted one and one wanted the other. And he made a very, it was a brilliant point, that he talked about wanting to be cherished his whole life, and he would keep doing cherishing things with his partner, getting her flowers, writing her love notes.
Oh,
and
kind
one,
of romantic things.
And right, very romantic things. And one day... He asked her opinion about his manuscript, something he normally wouldn't do before he gave it to his editor. She felt so respected, which was what she wanted, is that she sent him flowers. She began cherishing him, but she needed to feel respected
first.
So it's just kind of an interesting thing for two partners. If you're thinking of you and your husband partner, right now,
he's not a husband, but
your
he's
life
a partner.
Your life partner. Would you say one of you would want to be cherished more, and one of you would want to be respected?
I think we'd both like to be cherished because I think the respect is inherent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And respect and trust, which is how you also talk about that, the trust. And Nancy, I can't believe it, but we have to stop because they like me to stop a couple minutes before the top of the hour. And I hope I can encourage you to come back for part two, because there's so much more to talk about.
I would love to, Diana.
Good. And thank you for, this has been such a fascinating show for me, and it's because of you. And people can go to your website and get more information, and that's nancydreyfus.com. It'll be on my synopsis of this program, which I'm, as soon as we hang up, I'm going to go write it.
I just want to say it has been a pleasure talking to such a smart clinician.
You're very dear. I hope I get to meet you in person one day. That would be such a treat.
Me too, you.
Take care, everybody, and I'll be back next week with Pepper Schwartz. So tune in, please. Bye.